want your soul.
We're closed, I shouted as three loud knocks resounded on the door of my office. The door burst open a second later nonetheless, and a woman in her late 20s with an icy gaze walked in. She closed the door behind her and strode up to my desk like a peacock without uttering a word. I noticed that she wore a small cross around her neck. "Didn't you hear what I said?" I asked. I puffed my cigarette, allowing the smoke to steadily leave my mouth and twirl in the air before blending in with the rest of the room's stuffy atmosphere. I put the cigarette on the ashtray filled with other butts and ash. "I need your help, officer." She spoke in a soft yet stern tone, ignoring my previous remark. "Detective," I corrected her. "And if you want to talk, schedule an appointment first, and then we can discuss things." I opened the drawer and pulled out my flask, taking a gulp from it. The booze burnt my throat, but reinvigorated me. I knew I was slowly driving myself to my own grave with so much drinking and smoking, but I was way past caring. I returned the flask to the drawer and put the cigarette back in my mouth. The woman looked at me with a grimace of disgust. "My daughter is missing," she said, now with more concern in her voice. That sentence struck a nerve with me, but I tried not to show it. She sat on the chair in front of my desk and stared at me with an unrelenting gaze, so intently that I had no choice but to give her my undivided attention. I puffed my cigarette once more, put it out in the ashtray, and lit another one. "Sorry, I don't do missing persons of that sort. I can help you find a lost relative or find out if your husband is having an affair, but not something like this. Besides, you're better off going to the police for that," I said, leaning back in my chair and staring at her. "I already did, and they can't help me," she said coldly and reached inside her jacket. A moment later, she took out a photograph, which she proceeded to place on the desk in front of me. "This is my daughter, Alexandra. She's 12 years old. We live in a town called Northbury." "Never heard of it," I said, picking up the picture. On it was a little girl in a school uniform with short black hair, smiling at the camera. I grabbed the picture and curiously inspected it, flipping it over to see if anything was written on the back, but there was nothing there. The lady responded, "I didn't expect you to. It's a really small town with a population of only 1,500. "What did you say your name was, miss?" I asked, sliding the picture back to her. "It's Lydia Burroughs." "And how long has your little girl been missing?" I asked, a thought forming at the back of my mind that tempted me to consider taking this case. It's been a week, and it's not just my little girl. Children have been going missing in Northbury for months, vanishing without a trace. I raised my chin and tapped my fingers on the table in bafflement. "I haven't heard of this on the news anywhere," I responded suspiciously. "Well, the media doesn't cover anything there. For all they're concerned, the children wandered off into the old mine and died by accident. But I'm telling you, there's something else at play here. Someone or something is responsible for kidnapping the children. I'm sure of it."
"And when did you say the first disappearance occurred?"
"It was about 6 months ago. Every month, one child disappears. People know it, but they don't want to talk about it. They live their lives and hope that their kid won't be next." "Okay, well then why stay in that town if you knew the danger?" Lydia looked down at her lap before back at me and said, "I was born and raised there. It's a very small town, but family-like Christian community. Being educated in the St. Peter Elementary School, I had an enlightening experience and wanted my daughter to experience the same thing. There is no place in America that offers the education Northbury has. Trust me, I looked it up." "So then you took away from your daughter a chance for a proper education and put her in a religious school? In the middle of goddamn nowhere?" I judgmentally asked, not caring about using the Lord's name in vain in front of a religious person. Over the years in my career as a cop, I've dealt with all sorts of parents, and I knew exactly the type Lydia was. The religious helicopter kind, which brought more trouble than help with her overzealousness and fucked up their own kids beyond repair. Something about all of that made me want to take this case even more. Lydia frowned before saying, "With all due respect, Detective, how I raised my daughter is none of your concern." "All right, you're right, you're right. Please continue." I decided not to argue and I put out my cigarette. "My daughter always comes home by 4 p.m. after school. But last Thursday, she was supposed to have extracurricular activities and come back home around 7. When 8 o'clock came, I decided to call her, but she wasn't answering her phone. She's been gone ever since." "Well, did she mention what kind of activities she'd be attending or where?" "No, and I didn't ask. My daughter is a good student. I don't need to hover over her and check her every step along the way. She was independent, so I gave her the freedom of responsibility." She spoke so calmly that I was amazed at the frigidity this woman displayed talking about her daughter's disappearance. I took a mental note to probe her for some more questions later and determined if she had anything to do with Alexander's disappearance. She continued, "The police found no lead on any suspects or any of the missing children, and that's why I contacted you. I know you probably don't deal with this sort of case usually, but I am willing to pay you handsomely. How does $10,000 up front sound? And another $10,000 if the case is solved." "Now hold on a second. I haven't even said if I'd take the case yet," I interjected, shocked by the price she offered. "Well, I need an answer as soon as possible, because if you're not going to help me, I have to look for someone else. There are 6 children that could be either dead or in danger," she coldly responded. I scratched my chin, observing her with a contemptuous glance. The woman must have been really desperate to come seeking help from a washed-out ex-cop. The money sounded nice, but it wasn't so much about the cash. It's been a week, and the little girl was probably already dead, just like all the others. But I knew what it was like living in anticipation, worried day and night, jumping at every call and message. Getting a closure was better, no matter what the outcome was. "All right, fine," I finally responded, and I lit another cigarette. Researching Northbury was harder than I expected. There were no ways to mark it on the GPS, and the people either never heard about the place or knew vaguely how to reach it. Even with Lydia's instructions, it was a pain driving there. The miles of area surrounding the town were comprised of forested hills and old perilous roads that curved on and on in an inconsistent manner until they reached a clearing leading downhill into the town. Northbury was exactly how I imagined it, a dozen blocks put together to harbor the title town, with barely anything of necessity located inside. Passing through made me feel like driving through a ghost town, as there were no people anywhere outside. Don't get me wrong, it looked like a nice place for a weekend getaway, but not a place you'd want to live in. I stopped the car and opened up the folder of printed documents that Lydia sent me on my email. There were a few pictures of Alexandra, her medical and school records, names of the other 5 children who have gone missing, and potential places I should visit for witness questioning. It was 2 p.m. when I arrived, so I first decided to visit the St. Peter Elementary School. "Barry Torres, private investigator. I'm here to see Teacher Reynolds." I introduced myself to the caretaker at the entrance. The old man raised his bald head and smiled a half-tooth grin as he said, "Ah, detective, we've been expecting you. My name is Gerald. Please come this way." He then kindly led me through the corridor. "The children are in class right now, but it'll be over in 10 minutes. "I see. Are you the only one working at the entrance, Gerald?" I asked as we made our way to the second floor. "I am. However, I have other duties to attend to, so I am never at the entrance at specific times. This is a big school, and there's a lot of work to be done." "Well, do you keep a timeline of your duties?" "I do, actually. We have a diary at the entrance, so if you want, I can show it to you later." "I'd appreciate that, thank you. Is there another exit out of the school?" There is. There's a door all the way at the back. It leads into the schoolyard. We then stopped in front of one of the classrooms. While we are here, please wait until the bell rings, Gerald said. I nodded and he left the corridor with the sound of heavy footsteps echoing. I looked through the glass on the door and saw a relatively young teacher writing something on the blackboard and speaking to the students. I reached into the pocket on the inside of my jacket and pulled out my flask. I took one sip and patiently waited until the bell rang. Only moments after it did, doors started to swing open and the murmurs of little kids filled the corridor as they exited the classrooms and went for their five-minute breaks. Reynolds was in the classroom arranging some folders, so I took the chance to go inside and intercept him. Mr. Reynolds, I asked. He raised his head in my direction and nodded, suspiciously asking, Yeah, what can I do for you? I'm Detective Barry Torres. I'm here to ask you a few questions about the missing children in Northbury. Mr. Torres, pleasure to meet you. Reynolds shook my hand and his demeanor seemed to suddenly change from cautious to friendly as a smile was strewn across his face. He sat down and leaned in his chair, crossing his legs. So, how can I help you, Detective? He asked curiously. Last Thursday, Alexandra Burroughs had her last lesson for the day with you. Have you seen where she went after that? I knew that Lydia expected me to prioritize finding her child, but all six children were equal in my mind. I would, however, need to follow the freshest trail, though. No, I'm afraid I don't know. I saw her exiting the classroom with a classmate, Emily Strauss, but that's all I saw. According to the police report, Emily told the police that Alexandra stayed in school. However, she doesn't know where. Well, the report said that Alexandra had extracurricular activities to attend after school, but the school has no records of her having any such activities either. Yeah, that is correct. I do find it odd, I have to say. Reynolds scratched his chin. I know that the school is very, very strict about the rules, and they try to keep close tabs on all the students, especially with so many children that have gone missing in the last 6 months or so. I jotted down some notes before looking back up at him. Do you happen to remember what Alexandra was like? And Reynolds shrugged. Well, she was very attentive in class, one of the better students. I don't think there's anything more I can say about her. Well, have you noticed anything weird prior to her disappearance? Reynolds then snapped his fingers and continued. She did have one incident about a month ago during PE class with Mrs. Ambers. She was apparently bullied by the other girls in the locker room. I don't know the details, but you could go ask the teacher. I see. I wrote down the name of the teacher. Who was in the school during the time of her disappearance? And Reynolds thought about this for a moment. Well, you know, something like that, that's kind of hard to tell. There should be a list that you can see in the principal's office, but my guess is there weren't more than three teachers at the time, plus the janitor, maybe. I scratched my cheek. So Alexandra was either coaxed into joining after-class activities off the grid, which were never even on the list, or she deliberately broke the rules and ran away, possibly due to bullying, depending on how extensive it was. At this moment, I didn't have enough information to reach any kind of definitive conclusion. Do you happen to remember seeing in which direction Alexandra went after exiting your classroom? I asked, trying to narrow down the investigation. And Reynolds shook his head mournfully. No, sorry. I was still in the classroom when everyone left. I know that Alexandra and Emily were the last ones to leave, but I didn't see them after they went out. All right. Then what about the other missing children? Have you noticed anything strange with them prior to their disappearances? Like bullying or behavioral changes and such? No, nothing like that. Some of the kids that went missing were top of their class, living their lives normally every day. Then they just vanished. I see, I said and reached inside my jacket. When I pulled out my flask, Reynolds frowned and made a comment. Detective, please put that away. This is a place of God. Yeah, all right. I'm almost done here anyway. I don't mean just the school, Detective. This entire town is a religious sanctuary. You will find that the townsfolk are less welcoming to the likes of the outsiders, especially someone who engages in such blasphemous activities. He then made a disgusted grimace at the last statement. I learned to ignore such remarks over the years. I think I have everything I need here. Thank you, Mr. Reynolds, I said and left the classroom. I contemplated who the potential witnesses could be, and the first person who came to my mind was the janitor. Oh, and one more thing, detective, Reynolds shouted as I stepped over the threshold. I then turned around to face him. Who sent you here? On your investigation. It was Lydia Burroughs. I'm sorry, who? He narrowed his eyes. The mother of Alexandra, Lydia Burroughs. Reynolds then shook his head steadily. Well, that can't be right. Alexandra doesn't have a mother. Well, what do you mean she has no mother? I asked, suspiciously frowning. I mean her mother died when Alexandra was 3 years old. It's been only her father, Harry, taking care of her. Really? Is the father still in town? Yes, of course. Write down this address. Reynolds proceeded to tell me the address of the Burroughs family household, and I jotted it down on my notepad. Okay, so is there anyone going by the name of Lydia Burroughs in this town? Not that I know of. This is a small town and everybody knows everybody, so I can't imagine not knowing anyone from the Burroughs family. I see. I stared at the notes I took so far. Is the principal still here? Yes, he is. His office is on this floor. Turn right after you exit and then right once more, and you should see a door that says principal's office on the right. I nodded and then left the classroom. My mind was racing faster than I anticipated it would after the conversation with the teacher, and I was furious at Lydia, or whoever she was. If my client wasn't Alexandra's mother, then who was she? Moreover, was Lydia even her real name, or did she choose a pseudonym? And why did she want me to start this case in the first place? There must have been something of importance to her on this investigation. Maybe she was a mother of one of the other kids, but then it still didn't make sense for her to lie to me. Whoever she was, she must have anticipated that I would figure out pretty quickly that she was an imposter. I made a mental note to call her later. By the time I was out of the classroom, the murmurs of the kids had died down entirely and everyone was in class, making my footsteps echo in the hallway. I knocked on the door of the principal's office and heard a female's voice raise. Come in. I opened the door, and to my right was the secretary's desk, with a middle-aged woman sitting by it, staring at me with curiosity. Can I help you? She asked politely with a smile. Detective Torres, private investigator. I'm here to talk to the principal. Her smile dropped, and I saw her get visibly nervous. Some people were not comfortable around law enforcement, and despite only being a private detective, my demeanor still caused some people to feel uneasy. I attributed her anxiety to that, but reminded myself to question her if I reached a dead end with every other lead. Give me a moment, please, she said, giving me a forced smile this time. She pressed a button on the desk's phone and said, Mr. Greenwood, there's a private investigator here to see you. A moment of pause ensued before a deep voice came through the speaker. Thank you, Darcy. Let him in. You can go see the principal now. The secretary smiled as if I hadn't just heard what he said over the phone. I nodded and proceeded through the door. The office was ostentatious from first glance, contrasting the sterility of the pristine school. There was a big shelf packed with books on the right side of the room, various trophies on the other end, and diplomas, certificates, and thank you notes on the wall. In front of me, behind the desk, sat a burly, bald black man, with fingers crossed. Upon my entrance, he stood up and approached me to shake hands. Mr. Torres, he said. Caretaker Gerald told me you were here. Please take a seat. He gestured to the wooden chair in front of the desk. I slumped as he sat down in his own, more comfortable leather seat, going back to the previous position of crossing his fingers. Would you like a drink, detective? I have some whiskey here if you'd like. The focus this man had on the materialistic items made me question his dedication to the learnings his school was offering. Oh, well, I thought this was a place of God, I sarcastically remarked. Greenwood gave me a courteous smile that looked like he was annoyed. So what can I do for you, Detective? I assume you're here because of the missing kids? That's correct. I know you're probably busy, so I'll get to it right away. I need you to tell me about Alexander Burroughs. Absolutely. What would you like to know? He cleared his throat and leaned back in his chair. Can you tell me who was in the school at the time of her disappearance? Yes, that would be math teacher Reynolds, Bible study teacher Mr. Schaefer, and Mrs. Wilkins, the discipline teacher. Then there was, of course, caretaker Gerald, cleaning Lady Bryan's, and myself. Is there any way for you to confirm if everyone else left the school by that time? No, not me, but Mrs. Bryan's can, because she's responsible for cleaning all the classrooms. So if anyone else remained on the school premises, she would have known. And where were you between the times of 4 p.m. and 7 p.m.? Right here, in my office. I often have a lot of paperwork to do, so I stay overtime. But around 5 p.m., I head home. I jotted everything he said down, while Greenwood swiveled in his chair with a squeaking noise and stared at me in anticipation. He glanced intermittently from my eyes to my notes, and so I continued. All right. So what after-class activities was Alexandra usually taking? She participated in lots of activities. I can't count all of them, Detective. You need to understand that she was one of the best students in our school. She went above and beyond in everything she did. Well, I was told she had no extracurricular activities assigned on the day of her disappearance. That is correct. And we don't know who told her to attend the activity, nor what activity it even was. Well, what can you tell me about the other missing children? Not much. They disappeared abruptly. No one could have foreseen it even happening. Well, where were they when they disappeared? Their disappearances are very random, Detective. Alexandra went missing in school, but the others either never made it home from school, or they just went missing while they were out somewhere. I see. A lot of people speculate that they went missing in the mines. What can you tell me about that? Oh, that, he chuckled as he shook his head. I wouldn't concern myself too much with that, Detective. It's a rumor. The old mines have been closed off for years, ever since the accident. The accident? What accident? Greenwood then explained. There was a huge cave-in back in the 70s, and since then the mines have been cordoned off. There's no way for those kids to get anywhere near it. He put his hands on his lap now as he continued swiveling left and right slowly. I tapped the pen on my notepad repeatedly, pursing my lips. I started to feel exhausted and needed a drink or a smoke. I stared at the names of the potential suspects I wrote down. Reynolds, Schaefer, Wilkins, Gerald, Bryans. I talked to Reynolds, but I still had a lot of work to do. I decided to narrow it down and go by what the principal said, by asking the cleaning lady who she saw in school last Thursday. That might help me speed things up. Is Miss Bryans in school right now? I asked, underlining her name on my notepad. Yep. Yes, she is. Go talk to Gerald. He'll know exactly where she is. I appreciate that. I have one final question. I then looked up at him to see him staring at me in anticipation, still swiveling steadily. Go ahead, he smiled. Who is Lydia Burroughs? Greenwood stopped swiveling in his chair, and suddenly, without the squeaking, silence fell on the room. He frowned and scratched his chin, as if trying to remember something. I can't say it rings a bell, he said, and he slowly shook his head as we maintained eye contact. I leaned forward and asked again. Are you sure about that, Mr. Greenwood? He inhaled through his nose loudly and looked away for a moment before he shrugged and said, It could be a relative of Alexander Burroughs, but I don't know anybody by that name. And let me assure you, I know everybody in this town. I silently nodded, staring down at my notes again. I should get going now. Thanks for your help, Mr. Greenwood. I stood up and he did the same. He saw me to the door and on my way out, he said, What happened to those children is a tragedy, and our town hasn't been the same since it started. I appreciate you for putting effort into this matter, but try not to dig too deep. You remember what Nitschke said about the abyss. Some things are better left alone, Detective. I wasn't sure if this was a heartfelt warning or a threat, Before I could give him a proper response, he politely closed the door in my face. I said goodbye to the secretary and went down to Gerald. He was sitting behind the counter at the entrance, reading a book when I arrived. Upon hearing footsteps, he raised his head, and upon realizing who was coming, he placed the bookmark between the pages he was reading and stood up to greet me. "Detective, how is your investigation going?" "I'm not sure yet. I have more questions than I have answers. I need you to tell me where the cleaner is." "Mrs. Bryant's? I saw her in classroom 105 about 10 minutes ago. She cleans in a linear but quick way, so expect to find her around 108 or 109 by now." "Thank you. I have a few questions for you as well before I leave, actually." "Go on ahead. I'll do everything in my power to assist you, sir." He sat on the table and curiously observed me. "You were here on the day Alexander Burroughs disappeared, correct?" "That I was." "Have you seen where she went after her lessons?" "No, sorry. Like I said, I have to hop from place to place, and I spent most of the day fixing the fence last Thursday." "Well, have you noticed anyone or anything suspicious that day on the school grounds?" He thought for a moment, staring at the ceiling. He then crossed his arms, revealing a small tattoo on his forearm. And when he noticed me staring at it, he pulled down his sleeves quickly. A moment later, he shook his head with a disappointed expression on his face. "Sorry, detective. I don't think anything suspicious happened that day. I did my work, went home, and that was it." I scratched my chin, staring him down. Something was very strange about the way he responded and stared at me nervously, as if waiting to see if I'd bought it. "Yeah. Well, when I arrived earlier today, you said you'd been expecting me. Who informed you of my arrival?" "Oh, one of the parents called today and said they hired a private eye and that he'll be here shortly. They blurted it out so quickly, I never even managed to catch their name, though." I could not believe that Lydia would sabotage the investigation like this. Calling in advance and letting witnesses know that I'm coming to question them is the worst thing she could have done. It gives them ample time to prepare their responses and even get their stories straight among each other. I was beyond pissed, despite the enormous pay. "Does the name Lydia Burroughs ring a bell to you?" I asked, intent on pressing him more. "No, I'm sorry, sir." He apologized again with a grievous expression on his face. "I know this town well, and ain't nobody from the Burroughs family under the name Lydia that I know of." My phone started to ring and I excused myself. The caller ID said it was Lydia, so I hastily picked it up, putting some distance between myself and the caretaker. Hello? Detective Torres? A familiar feminine voice resounded on the other end. Did you make it safely to Northbury? I did, and I don't appreciate you calling to let the witnesses know I'm coming. What do you mean? You called the caretaker hours ago to tell him I was on my way. That's what he told me. There was a pause before she said in a panicked, yet somehow at the same time calm tone. Detective, listen. I never made that call, which means they're already on to you. You need to be careful who you trust. Your life could be in danger. What are you talking about? I said skeptically. I'm going to send you my address and an image. If you see anyone with the same symbol as on the image, stay away from them and don't trust anything they say. Do you understand? I was furious at her for dictating terms like this and expecting me to trust her after lying to me so blatantly. Speaking of that, I'm already finding out interesting things on my investigation. Oh, she asked. Yeah. For instance, no one here seems to know anybody called Lydia Burroughs. And they also claim that Alexander's mother is dead. So why are you lying to me? There was another pause on the line, but I knew she heard me. A moment later, she responded. I promised to tell you everything in person, but not over the phone. Please stop by my place as soon as you're done at the school. Fine, I'll be there later. Thank you, officer. Detective, I corrected her, but she already hung up. I went back to Gerald, who was reading his book again, until I returned to him. About the cleaning lady, I started when my phone vibrated again. I picked it up and opened the message sent by Lydia. There was an address and under that a text which said, if you see anyone with a symbol, stay away from them. Under the text was an image of an upside-down cross inside a triangle. I probably stared at the picture for too long because Gerald said, something wrong, detective? I looked up at him to see him staring at me with undivided attention. I put my phone back in my pocket. No, nothing, I said, glancing at his sleeve-covered forearms again. And his forearm had the same tattoo as the symbol in the picture. Mrs. Bryans, the cleaning lady, was in classroom 110, neatly arranging the desks and chairs, facing away from me. The classroom already seemed tidy enough to me when I arrived, and I was sure it was due to the children's manners. She didn't notice when I came inside, so I called out to her. Mrs. Bryans. She jumped and turned around, holding her hand on her chest, visibly startled. Oh my goodness, she chuckled at her own scare. Sorry, I didn't mean to surprise you. I'm Detective Torres. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions? Why, yes, of course. She tucked one more chair under the desk neatly and approached to shake my hand with a smile. How can I help you, sir? She asked. I'm here to investigate the missing student's case. I take it you were here last Thursday between the hours of 4 p.m. and 7 p.m., correct? Yes, sir, I was, she nodded energetically. Have you seen this girl anywhere during that time? I pulled out the photo of Alexandra and showed it to Mrs. Bryant's, and her face lit up with a smile, which I took as a sign of her recognizing the victim. Oh, yes, I have seen her. I think it was around 4:45 p.m. I saw her going down into the basement. I was already done cleaning there, so I didn't go down anymore. The basement? Yeah, there is a faith and spirituality classroom down there. So I suppose she had an after-class activity to attend. Are there any other classrooms down there? No, the rest of the rooms are for staff only, like storages, boiler room, and so on. Well, who teaches faith and spirituality? Well, that would be Mr. Myers. Okay, and was Mr. Myers in school during that time? No, sir, he wasn't. I saw him leave around 2:30 p.m. So that rules him out as a suspect. Alexandra went down to the basement for some reason. Again, either someone lured her to have a class there or she went down of her own volition. The first one seemed more plausible, though. Mrs. Bryans, who else did you see in school during those hours? She looked away for a moment, thinking. Well, there was Mr. Schaefer and Mrs. Wilkins. Gerald was here, too, now that I think of it. Oh, and of course, Principal Greenwood. Well, did you see any of them going to any places outside of their classrooms and offices? Places maybe they shouldn't have been? Not that I can think of. She thought for a moment again before saying, no, actually, Principal Greenwood did leave his office once. He went into the schoolyard and stayed there for a few minutes before returning to his office. Well, any idea why he went outside? No. No, Gerald was out there fixing the fence, so I suppose he wanted to talk to him about something. All right, well, when was this? I think it was sometime around 4:30. He then went back to his office around 10 minutes later and left school around 5, around the same time as Gerald, I think. And I left shortly after that. Now, you have a pretty good memory, Miss Bryans. I gave her a faint smile, feeling the muscles in my face cramping up. She chuckled heartedly at that. When you work here for as long as I do, you memorize the people's patterns, sir. Is that so? What irregular patterns have you noticed on that day, ma'am? Well, only the one with the principal. He never leaves the office, let alone goes to Gerald to talk to him. Mr. Greenwood isn't fond of chasing people around, so he instead invites them to his office when they need something, regardless of whether they are busy with work or not. It bothered us a lot at first, but later we got used to it. That's why I found it odd that he went out like that. Well, maybe he couldn't get in contact with Gerald and decided to look for him instead, I asked. But the cleaning lady shook her head. Sir, I've been cleaning after Principal Greenwood for 15 years now, and if he personally comes looking for you, it can only mean it's a serious emergency. There are no exceptions. Okay. Okay, well, let me get this straight. after you saw Alexandra go down there, you didn't see her come out?
No, sir, I did not, but I could have missed her, because by the time she was done, I was probably on the third floor.
Well, is there any way you could have maybe missed someone else coming in and out of the school as well?
Well, it's possible, sir, but the person would have to be very sneaky.
Okay, that's all I needed from you, Mrs. Bryans. I appreciate your time.
Oh, and please, I'd prefer it if you didn't tell the principal that I told you anything.
Oh, I won't. You don't have to worry about that.
I decided to go down to the basement to investigate the potential crime scene in hopes of finding some evidence. On my way down there, I kept thinking about Gerald and his tattoo. What did that tattoo mean? Was this some kind of a cult? Is that why Lydia wasn't honest with me? If this was some sort of illegal organization, then the entire police force may have trouble cracking it, let alone an alcoholic ex-cop going on a one-man mission. Gerald was suspicious, but then again, so was the principal. Didn't he say he had a lot of paperwork to do and stayed in his office the whole time on the day of the disappearance?
You'd think that he'd mention going out on a crucial day, such as the one when a kid goes missing. I mean, he is the principal of the school, after all.
If the cleaning lady's story was correct, then Greenwood couldn't have been down in the basement in time to harm the girl, but that didn't mean he wasn't somehow involved in it. The basement was a lot colder than the other floors and absent of any bright lights. I could see how walking through there would be terrifying for children, especially if they were alone during nighttime. I located the faith and spirituality classroom and went inside. It resembled a chapel more than a classroom, with rows of benches on both sides of the room, a small altar at the far end, and a blackboard on the wall behind. I heard people say that they often get this overwhelmingly euphoric feeling when they enter the house of God. I felt uneasy instead. I pulled out my flask and took a gleeful sip before putting it back and getting to work. As expected, the place was pristine and spotless. I doubted I'd find any evidence whatsoever, but decided to comb through anyway. Only 5 minutes into my search, I caught something at the corner of my eye. I wouldn't have noticed it at all, unless I came all the way around to the other side of the altar, and once I was there, I saw a tiny cross tucked under it, blending in with the colors around it. I approached it and grabbed it between my index and thumb. It was tiny and caked with a layer of dirt. As I raised it, I realized that the cross was actually a necklace, the same kind that Lydia was wearing. I pulled out Alexandra's picture, and sure enough, she wore one in it. This was a religious school, of course, so it could have been anyone's. But the thing is, I saw no one else wearing it over their uniforms. Upon closer inspection of the necklace, I realized it had been broken at one of the chains, which further enforced my theory that something strange happened here. I examined the nearby area, but found no traces of blood or anything else wrong. It has been a week, though, so anything could have happened since then. I cleaned the cross and put it in my pocket. If Lydia proved to be trustworthy, I'd show it to her and ask her if she recognized it. One thing was for sure, though. Something did happen here. A struggle or something. The kids here were so disciplined, it didn't seem like they would get violent with each other. At least not around an altar, which I assumed they were forbidden from even approaching. I decided to go back and question Gerald again, but by the time I got to the entrance, he was already gone. The principal had left too, so I would have to leave the questioning for tomorrow. I checked Lydia's address and drove to it. She lived in an average house, devoid of any prominent features, in an even quieter part of the town, isolated from the rest of the households. I rang the doorbell and she opened the door, greeting me with a smile. "Detective, come on in," she said. I nodded and followed her inside the living room. We sat down and she offered me a drink. I refused and took a sip from my own flask before deciding to focus on business. "What have you come up with, detective?" she asked. No, first you're going to give me some answers," I said. She crossed her legs and put her hands around her knee. "Fair enough. What do you want to know?" she asked. "Who the fuck are you?" I leaned forward. "My real name is Lydia Burroughs.
As you've already found out, Alexandra's mother, my sister, died years ago. You're Alexandra's aunt. And she nodded. Then why does everybody in town say they don't know who you are? Because they don't know my real name. I go by the name of Lydia Stevens, a lonely woman with no family, living at the edge of town. Well, that still doesn't answer a lot of the other questions I have. And I will give you the answers to those in a bit. Now tell me, have you found anything useful on your investigation so far? I put my hand in my pocket and pulled out the tiny cross. Lydia widened her eyes and opened her mouth, immediately standing up and grabbing the cross. She examined it with relish, as she said. This was Alexandra's, no doubt about it. You see the engraving over here? She pointed to extremely tiny letters, easily missable. It says, "May God protect you, daughter." It was given to her by her mother. Where did you find it? She spoke with energy in her voice now, in contrast to the frigidity she often displayed. She sat back down and stared at me, expecting an answer. I found it in the school basement. Whoever kidnapped her, they did it there. She gently placed the cross on the table and cleared her throat. You remember that picture I sent you? Did you see anybody with it? Well, the caretaker had a tattoo. What does it mean? It's the mark of a very old, very secret society in this town. They've been in the town since probably the beginning. They've infiltrated the town years ago, and they continue to poison it. They have no name, and the people here are too afraid to give them one. The truth is, Detective, they haven't abducted only 6 children. They've abducted 48. What? Yes, since around the mid-70s, the Order has been abducting 1 child every year. The children have never been found, but it's well known what happened to them. What did happen to them? I asked at the edge of my seat now, curious. The Order believes that there is a corruption in town. They believe that child sacrifices are needed in order to appease the beast that resides within. Most of the children were abducted and sacrificed, but some of them were willingly sacrificed by their own parents, members of the Order. So why did they start kidnapping children monthly now? They believe that the deity they seek to appease has grown an appetite and requires more innocent souls. They tried abducting children twice a year, but since they didn't work, they increased the number in hopes to stop the corruption. That's fucking crazy. A secret society is abducting children and sacrificing them to a demon? You expect me to believe this horse shit? I said as I stared at her judgmentally. Lydia stood up. She crossed her arms and walked over to the bookshelf behind her. Are you a religious man, Detective? She asked, looking through the books. She turned her head to me while holding one hand on the bookshelf. No, I'm not, I said sternly. Is it because of your daughter? She asked with a curious expression on her face. I shot my head up to her, suddenly feeling my heart beginning to race. Lydia took out a thick book and sat back down in front of me, placing the book on the coffee table. Only then did I notice the big cross and a triangle symbol across the cover. I know about you, Detective. I know you were a homicide detective who worked on a case involving a cult. I know how they... I'm sorry. I know that losing a child must be very difficult. I felt anger boiling up in me. Who the fuck was she to talk about my daughter as if she knew her? I took out a cigarette and lit it up, bottling up my anger. I puffed it and said, with all due respect, I don't think you do know. Amber was only 8 years old. She was full of life, and she had a bright future ahead of her. She wanted to become a doctor, and then her future was taken away from her by a sick bastard who burnt her alive because he believed God told him to do so. Lydia stared down at the book with a sorrowful expression on her face. There was a long silence until I puffed my cigarette once more and said, if there is a God, Mrs. Burroughs, then he is a cruel one to create such monsters in this world.
and he is even more cruel for allowing innocent children to die in such gruesome ways. She tentatively looked up at me. Did you quit the force after that? I shook my head. Yeah, but not before I got revenge for Amber. The cult had already killed dozens of innocent children. Everyone was afraid to take the case and track them down, fearing their family would end up like mine. I had nothing else to lose, so I worked on the case day and night for a whole year. Eventually, I found them, and there was a raid in their hideout. Most of them were captured and sentenced to life in prison. But that wasn't enough for me. I used my connections to bribe the prison guards and the cult leader's cellmate. Let's just say that the leader renounced all his gods and begged for mercy before he died. There was another long pause before Lydia said, "And that's why I never told you about my true intentions. If I had told you that there was a cult involved in all of this, you never would have taken the case, right?" I nodded. She was right. There was no way in hell I would have taken on another cult case, despite having nothing more to lose. So this cult, how do you even know about them if they're so secretive? "Well, that's another thing I didn't tell you," she said. She then pulled up her sleeve to reveal the tattoo of the cross inside a triangle on her forearm. "I used to be a member." I puffed my cigarette as I stared at Lydia's tattoo. I didn't know what to think exactly, so I simply stared. "Why are you telling me all this right now?" "Because I owe it to you. I want you to trust me. I want Alexandra found, dead or alive. She's my niece and I love her." "Well, if you were a member, then you probably know who the others are and where we can find them." "No, it's not that simple." She shook her head. "Members are required to wear masks at all times during meetings. I could never tell who was in the room with me. Important missions are entrusted only to the so-called devoted, and the hideout of the order is changed often to avoid getting caught." There was a silence in the room for a while before she continued. "Do you have any leads, detective?" "I do. The caretaker and the principal. I need to question them again tomorrow." "Well, if you like, you can stay here for the night. There's a motel nearby, but they charge a lot since we rarely get visitors." "Okay, I appreciate that. I will take you up on your offer." I spent the night at Lydia's place, and the following morning, I went back to the school. The caretaker, Gerald, was at the entrance, reading his book, as usual, when I arrived. When he saw me, a forced smile was strewn across his face as he stopped reading. He looked like someone who managed to get rid of the vermin in his garden, only to see them back there again the following day. "Detective, still have business here, I assume?" I took a look at the book he was reading, God Can and God Will by Ronald Fry. I didn't see the symbol of the order anywhere, but I figured they'd probably not want to advertise it so openly. "You enjoying the book?" "I sure am," Gerald said. "It's about a man who found his purpose in life in prison through God. He explains that all of us can change and atone for our sins." "Yeah. You think you'd find yourself through God if you were in prison now, Gerald?" I grunted and sat on the edge of the desk, towering above the caretaker. He didn't answer. "That's an interesting tattoo you have on your forearm," I said, pointing to a sleeve-covered arm. "It's a reminder," Gerald said with a grievous expression on his face. "Oh, yeah? A reminder of what?" "It's a reminder of the mistakes I made in my life, of what I am and what I am not anymore," he retorted. I gave him a courteous smile. I pulled out my notes and said, "Mr. Gerald, when we talked yesterday, you failed to tell me that on the day of Alexander's disappearance, Principal Greenwood came to speak to you. Now, why did he do that?" Gerald shrugged. "I didn't think it was important, so I must have forgot about it." He scratched the back of his head, a sure sign that he was uncomfortable. "Well, what did the principal want to talk to you about?" I asked, sternly staring at him now. "Wasn't anything special. He just gave me some tasks to resolve around the school, that kind of thing." "Well, what were the tasks?" Then he started to stutter before saying, mowing the lawn, oiling the gate, something like that. I tapped my notes with a pen slowly while staring at him, and he moved his gaze away as if too nervous to look at me. You know, Gerald, it doesn't seem very likely that he would come to talk to you just for something like that. Gerald simply shrugged again, looking down at the book. I turned to face him and leaned in closer. Gerald, why don't you cut the bullshit? If you're somehow involved in this little girl's disappearance, you're definitely going to prison for long enough to write a fucking book like Ronald Fry here. And right now, things aren't looking too good for you. You understand what I'm saying? Gerald sighed, tapping his foot on the ground nervously. He looked at me and said, there was a man who came here last Thursday. I don't know who he is, which is strange because I know everyone around these parts. But he came in asking for Principal Greenwood. I pointed him to the principal's office, and around 10 minutes later, Greenwood came to see me. Uh-huh. I didn't want to interrupt him now. He told me not to mention to anyone that I saw that stranger, not even the police. He threatened that he would fire me and that I'd be even in more trouble with somebody else. Something about the way he hesitated before saying that last part made me realize we were on the same page. So I got daring. Was it the order? He looked at me with perplexity in his eyes, obviously surprised that I knew about the order. How do you know about them? He asked. Well, I'll start with your tattoo. You're wearing the mark. Yep, but I'm not a member anymore. Haven't been in over 30 years. I've been hearing stories about them my whole life when I was young, about cleansing of corruption and so on. And I decided to join them when I was only 18. I didn't know back then what they did to kids, so when I found out, I got out of the group. You joined a secret cult only to leave shortly after, and they just let you go like that, huh? Gerald pulled the collar of his shirt down to reveal a tattoo on his upper chest. It was a similar tattoo to the one on his arm, only the cross was upright and the triangle was upside down. This is their brand on the people who decide to leave. It's a mark of shame and weakness, but also a reminder that revealing anything about the cult can have dire consequences. It's also a warning for other members not to talk to the likes of us. He hastily pulled the collar back up as if covering his private parts and stared back down at the book with visible shame in his eyes. I know I shouldn't have listened to Greenwood, but the cult is more powerful than you think. He threatened that my son could be the next one to go missing if I talked. I had no choice. You understand that, don't you? I didn't really feel pity for Gerald, even though I understood his situation. I put my notes back in my pocket and stood up. Yeah, I understand, Gerald. This man who came to the school, what's he look like? I don't know. I couldn't see his face clearly. He had a hoodie over his head. I see. I'm going to go visit the principal. I then left Gerald faster than he could respond again. Darcy jerked her head in my direction when I burst inside the principal's office, and I didn't stop to greet her, but instead went straight for the door. Sir, sir, you can't go in there, she shouted after me, but I was already inside the office. I closed the door behind me and faced Principal Greenwood, who had a baffled look on his face, sitting behind the desk. Detective Torres, can I help you? He asked somewhat impatiently as I sat in the chair in front. Greenwood, yes, yes you can. You can start by telling me the fucking truth and who you talked to last Thursday. Detective, we already talked about this. I already talked to Mrs. Bryans and to Gerald. The cleaning lady said she saw you leave the office, which is quite uncanny of you. And Gerald told me about the shady person who came asking for you. Does that ring any bells? Greenwood breathed in through his nose loudly and thought for a moment before saying, there was one person in school, come to think of it, but he and I didn't talk. Is that so? So why did he ask for you then? And why did you threaten the caretaker? Greenwood licked his lips and frowned, as if preparing to say something momentous. Detective, I don't appreciate you barging into my office like this, with false accusations. You're not a cop, and you have no authority here. Now, why don't you get your drunken ass out of my office before I throw you out myself? He stared at me with his fingers crossed, with lips contorted into a thin slit, and he frowned. I stared at him for a moment. I nodded defeatedly and stood up, making my way back to the door. There was a key in the doorknob, so I turned it and locked it. I put the key in my pocket and strode right back to the principal. His look of anger turned into one of confusion. "Hey, what do you think you're..." Before he could finish his sentence, I punched him right in the face, knocking him out of his chair and onto his back. He grabbed his face painfully, and I took him by the hand, lifting his arm up and pulling his sleeve. Sure enough, the tattoo of the order was on his arm, prominent against his bulky forearm. I punched him in the face once more and grabbed him by his shirt. "Who did you talk to?" I spat in his face while he widened his eyes in fear, panting. "You're out of your mind." Before he could say anything else, I punched him again in the face and then in the stomach. He coughed and raised his hand in a stop sign, saying, Okay. There was a guy who came into my office here on Thursday, but I don't know what he wanted." "That's bullshit," I shouted and prepared to punch him again. "All right, I'll tell you everything." Then there was a knock on the door and Darcy's muffled voice echoed. "Principal Greenwood, is everything okay in there?" The principal looked in the direction of the door and shouted that it was. I punched him again before he could tell her anything else, and he groaned in pain. My patience was nearly down to zero by then. So I reached behind my back and pulled out my revolver. The principal grew even more afraid at this. I placed the nuzzle of the gun on his forehead and shouted, "Talk, goddammit." "I can't. They'll kill me." "Well, I'm about to kill you as well, so I suggest you talk." "I don't know his name, I swear. He's a member of the order and he came to the school on the arrangement to kidnap Alexandra." I then pulled the hammer of the gun back, and Greenwood started talking even faster. "I arranged a false after-class activity for her to attend, so she went down to the basement. The guy with the scar went there to kidnap her, and that's the last I ever heard of either of them. I swear to you." "Well, where's the girl at now?" I don't know. I was only told to organize the kidnapping. I have no idea where she was taken. They don't tell me that." "Well, where's the order's hideout?" "I don't know that either." I backhanded him, and he started crying. "I swear I don't know. I just joined the order a month ago. They don't let new members in on their meetings." "Well, how do I find the guy with the scar then?" "He's often in the Good Siblings Bar on Mitchell Street. That's where he and I met." I dropped the principal on the ground and walked over to the door as he regained his breath. "You don't know who you're fucking with, Torres. The order is everywhere. And when they find you..." "When they find me what?" "You better hope that girl is still alive, Greenwood, because if the order doesn't kill you, I will definitely kill you. Do you understand me? I will come back into this school and I will blow your fucking brains out. I don't care who you are." With that, I unlocked the door and exited and saw Darcy's frightened gaze following me intently the whole time. A little later, I was out on the street in front of my car lighting a cigarette. I stared at the school, which stood silent like a behemoth. Not a single sound of people's voices or cars on the street. I puffed, the wisps of smoke merging and disappearing into the air. It was still too early for me to go to the Good Siblings Bar, but I could go and investigate it. Who was the man who came to the school? Clearly he was a member of the cult responsible for kidnapping Alexandra. The cult itself seems to be really careful. If someone like the principal didn't know their plans, they must have entrusted the entire kidnapping plan to only their highest-ranking members, but I was nowhere near finding them. I was about to open the door of my car when I heard the sound of a gun being cocked behind my head. "Don't move," a somewhat rough female voice said. I slowly put my hands on the roof of my car and responded. "Well, this isn't the first time I've been at gunpoint, you know." "Well, it might be your last." I slowly put my hand on the cigarette in my mouth and puffed it once more before letting the butt drop next to me. "You from the order?" "Shut up," the lady said and pressed the barrel of the gun closer to my head. She checked my right coat pocket and then the left one,
putting her hand inside to see if I had anything in there. You're looking for the kidnapper, right?
Yep, I am.
He's dead, the lady replied. Screwed something up big time, so they had him killed this morning. Fuck. Now I lost my only lead. The lady took a step back and said, you've been meddling in our business far too much. We don't usually let people go, but I'm feeling generous today. So I'm going to give you a fair warning. Leave Northbury and forget everything you saw here. You understand? I shook my head. I can't do that now, and you know it. I'm in too deep. So if you're going to shoot me, just shoot me. There was no response. Hey, don't leave me hanging here, I repeated and dared to slowly turn around. But no one was there. I put my hands in my coat pockets, cursing under my breath. I felt something in my left pocket, and when I pulled out my hand, I saw a small, wrinkled piece of paper. On it was a hastily written address. Maybe it's a trap, I thought as I stared at the address, but that didn't make any sense. The cult lady could have just shot me right here or taken me hostage, if they planned on performing some bullshit ritual on me. My only lead being dead, I decided to visit the address. Everything was close in Northbury, so I was there in only 5 minutes. The address given to me was an old house in what looked like a not-so-nice part of town. I assumed that this was one of those morbid places that would be left out of the pamphlets if they were to promote tourism here. I contemplated waiting in the car for the person who lived there to go out, so I could catch them by surprise. But given the fact that there were no other cars around, I was as inconspicuous as a polar bear in a jungle. I finished one cig and got out of my car, double-checking the address on the paper and the number of the house. I knocked on the door, which looked like it was just about ready to fall from its hinges, and waited. There was a sound of hushed, muffled voices coming from inside, and a batter of heavy footsteps resounding from within. A moment later, the sound of unlocking clicked loudly and the door opened slightly ajar, just enough for me to see half of a thin, sunken face. A door chain stretched itself between the inside of the wall and the door itself as the man stared at me with a blue eye from behind his cover. Yes? He asked skeptically, eyeing me from top to bottom. I'm Detective Torres. I'm here to investigate the missing children's case. Do you mind if I come inside? The man thought for a moment before timidly answering. I'm sorry, but now's not really a good time. He tried closing the door in my face, but I stopped him. Please, all I'm asking for is a few minutes. Someone's life could be in danger. The man then stared at me for a long moment before shutting the door in my face. A moment later, the sound of metal sliding resounded and the door opened widely. In front of me stood a man as skinny as I expected him to be, with bulging eyes, greasy brown hair, which fell down to his shoulders, and an oversized t-shirt. He stepped aside and allowed me to go in. The inside of the house was a mess, with wrappers and containers from fast food strewn all over the coffee table and knocked over on the floor. Sorry about the mess. I've been working a lot lately and didn't have time for anything else, he said. He picked up the Chinese takeaway plastic from the sofa and offered me to sit, but I politely declined. Staring at the mess made me think a rat was going to just jump out of the pile. But at the same time, his lifestyle reminded me very much of my own. Only instead of food, I had empty booze bottles all over the place and it reeked of cheap alcohol. I glanced at the man's forearms. He had a bandage over his left arm. Did you injure yourself? I asked. Yeah, broke a glass in the kitchen a few days ago, he said, looking at his forearm and then back at me. Do you mind if I see it? It might be serious. No, it looks really nasty. I think it's not a good idea. The man suddenly seemed to become nervous. No, I'm fine with it. I can check. I can make sure you're not infected. I'd really rather not. Oh, please. I insist. It was an order now, and he knew it. He hesitated, looking as if he was thinking of what he could use as an excuse. A moment later,
he started unwrapping his bandage. I put my hand behind my back, ready to draw my gun in case he tried to do something stupid. The bandages came off layer by layer, until they turned pink and then red. When he finally reached the end and took it off, along with the gauze, he displayed his forearm to me. There was a wound, about 2 inches long and 1 inch wide, in the crude shape of a rectangle, as if the skin had been flayed off. "Well, that must have been one hell of a shard," I said, and he didn't respond. I turned around and took a few slow steps, glancing around the room. "I thought I heard voices. Is someone else in here with you?" "No, no, it's just me," the man responded a little too quickly. Just then, there was a thud from a nearby closet door to my right. "Well, what was that?" "Oh, it's just the washing machine," the man said, staring at me with the expression of someone who was playing the hot and cold game and hoping you wouldn't look in the right place. I ignored him and drew my gun. I grabbed the doorknob and got my gun ready. "Detective, wait a minute. Don't open that, please," the man shouted, but it was too late. I had already swung the door open and pointed it at the figure that was seated inside. I immediately lowered my gun at the sight in front of me. It was a little girl with messy black hair, dirty school clothes, and a scared look in her eye. It was Alexandra. "Detective, I can explain. It's not what you think," the man said. "Shut the fuck up," I pointed my gun at him. "On your knees now. You don't know what you're doing." "I said, get on your damn knees." The man looked down and then swung his arm, flinging the nearby lamp in my direction. It hit my shoulder, and in that moment, the man then tackled me. "I can't let you take her back," he said as he wrestled with the gun. A loud bang resounded and the man fell on top of me. Alexandra screamed and I pushed the assailant off of me, his lifeless body slumping onto its back, staring vacantly at the ceiling. He was dead. "Alexandra, it's okay. I'm here to save you," I said, gesturing for her to come to me. I wasn't sure if I should trust the cops. The order seemed to be deeply rooted inside this town, and I couldn't tell if the police were in on it. I called the only person I could, Lydia. She arrived within minutes. When she saw Alexandria, she set out a sigh of relief and rushed to her niece to hug her. But that was it. She seemed only relieved, not ecstatic, as I imagined a parent should be when he finds a missing child. Alexandra herself seemed catatonic the whole time and still frightened, even when looking at the familiar face of her aunt. Lydia finally stood up and said, "Thank you, Detective, for finding Alexandra for us." I felt good. I just saved the life of a little girl, something I couldn't do for my own daughter. For the first time in a long time, I sincerely smiled. That was until my eyes fell on Lydia's upper chest, revealed above her dress. There was nothing there, no markings. She smiled, and I then heard the door burst open. I turned around to see a group of hardened, burly men and one short-haired woman standing menacingly in the doorway. "She almost managed to escape the order," Lydia said. I turned to face her and felt a blunt hit on the back of my head as it started to ring in my ears. I found myself on the ground, my vision blurry and spinning. I heard Alexandra scream for them to stop as one of the men grabbed her roughly and held her back. Lydia then crouched in front of me and said, "You see, the order never managed to kidnap Alexandra. The task was entrusted to one of our members. But then Sam here had to do what he thought was right." She pointed to the man I killed earlier. His conscience got in the way and he decided to take her into his home to keep her safe from the order. And so here we are. She stood up slowly and faced away from me, crossing her arms. I tried to wriggle out of the grip of my assailants, but was instead met with a kick to the side. Tears welled in my eyes from the pain and I took a mental note not to try resisting again. Lydia approached a now much more frightened Alexandra and put her hand on the child's tear-covered face. "But now that she is here, we can finally proceed with the sacrificial ritual," Lydia said, for the first time with some audible emotion and audible happiness in her voice.
She then walked around me and left the room, while the man holding Alexandra followed. What do we do with the pig and the traitor? The man holding me asked. Leave him to me, the short-haired woman said as she took my gun from one of the men. And I recognized that voice. All right, get back to the sacred site as soon as you dispose of them, the man holding me said, and I felt his grip loosen. Soon, everyone left the room and it was only Sam, the woman, and I remaining. She walked over to the window and peered through before pulling the blinds over the windows, further dimming the room. She stood in front of me, towering as she gave me a disgusted glance. You fucking idiot. She shook her head. What were you thinking, trusting Lydia? She threw my gun in front of me, which clattered on the ground. She walked over to the door and opened it. When she saw me staring at her confusedly, she rolled her eyes and said, Well, come on, old man. We need to get to the mines. I stood up with a loud groan. I'm not that old, I said, as I placed the gun behind my back. The short-haired lady was already outside and waiting in front of my car. I strode to her and opened the door. My mind was still racing a million thoughts a second, and I didn't even stop to think if she would double-cross me, like Lydia did. It wouldn't make sense for her to do that now. They had me pinned down, and she didn't have to let me go, right? We got in the car, and she said, Just go straight. I'll tell you when to turn and step on it. She was stern in her attitude, and the first thought that came to my mind as I put the keys into the ignition was her poor husband. What a bitch. The tires screeched as we drove off. If we hurry up, we should be able to get there before they kill the girl, she said. You're the one who held me at gunpoint earlier today, aren't you? You're the one who gave me the address, I said, glancing at her. She nodded and put her elbow on the side of the window, exposing the order's tattoo. Yep, name's Melissa. I've been trying to find Alexander for weeks. You what? I asked. Yeah, I infiltrated the order to find out what's going on with the missing kids. But since I'm relatively new, I couldn't do anything openly, since they were watching me. So your timing with the arrival is excellent. I scoffed, shaking my head. Are you a cop? Nope, just a Northbury citizen. Okay, so what's going on here? Melissa sighed. Lydia is the leader of the order. At least I think she is. She's the one who decides whose kid gets sacrificed to cleanse the corruption in the town. She used quotation marks with her fingers. A few years ago, she sacrificed her own daughter. She burned her alive. Oh my God, did she do something to Alexander's mother? No, that wasn't her. But I'm sure she would have if the kid's mom interfered. She's ruthless and will not stop at anything to complete the ritual. I once saw her cut a guy's tongue out for asking why they need to sacrifice kids. I scratched my chin, giving my brain time to process what I was hearing. Okay, so let me get this straight, I said. The cult organized for Alexandra to be kidnapped, but a renegade cultist decided to rescue her before the cult could take her. And then since Lydia couldn't find her, she hired me to solve the case for her. Do I got that right? Played you like a piano, Melissa said. That goddamn bitch. Well, you didn't have to kill that guy in the house, she judgmentally rebuked. I didn't kill him. We were wrestling for the gun and he must have accidentally pulled the trigger. He was right to attack me, though. Take a right turn over there, and Melissa pointed. We were at the edge of the town with houses to the right and the forested terrain to the left, hills rising tall. All right, so what are we going to do? There's probably way too many of them, I asked. There are more rebels inside the cult. They'll be at the ritual. All I got to do is give them the sign and they'll unleash hell. That was our last plan, in case everything else failed. Well, what if there's not enough of them? Then we'll all die, detective, and she shrugged. We drove for another few minutes until the remaining houses disappeared and we reached a huge fenced-off area to our left. Melissa told me to pull up near the entrance and from there, we got out of the car. The rickety gate was open, despite the sign which said no trespassing. Far up ahead was a quarry, stretching probably at least a whole mile, and way down below was the entrance into the mines. Come on, Gotta hurry, Melissa said, and proceeded down the makeshift staircase made from old rotted planks, which went around the inside wall of the quarry. It took us a good 5 minutes to reach the bottom, and by the time we did, I already felt like I needed another drink. I suppressed my desire and followed Melissa inside the dark entrance, leaving all vestiges of light behind. Try to be quiet here, she said in a whisper and pulled out a flashlight. She illuminated the path ahead and started walking. She seemed to know her way around the place with such familiarity that I figured she must have been here a lot of times. Is this the hideout? Yeah, she simply said. It wasn't long until we started to hear voices echoing in the distance. I couldn't discern what they were saying since they were too far away. Melissa didn't seem fazed by this, as she didn't even stop. I drew my gun, and as we went on, the voices got louder and louder. I still couldn't make out what they were saying, and eventually I realized the reason for that was the fact that they weren't speaking English. It sounded like church chanting in a language unlike any I've ever heard before, probably dozens of people all chanting at the same time. Melissa raised her hand for me to stop once more, so I complied. There was a faint orange light gleaming from around the corner, and it was evident that the voices were coming from right there. Melissa peeked carefully, and then came back to me and motioned for me to take a look. I carefully approached and slowly peeked. I saw a huge area, with what looked like dozens of people dressed in red robes, facing away from me. They all held lit candlesticks, staring up at an elevated area, which had something that looked like an altar on top. Alexandra was there, held firmly by two cultists by her arms, while Lydia faced the crowd, holding her arms up high with a knife in one of her hands. She was looking up and chanting something, as if in a trance, and the entire group repeated after her. So now what? I asked, turning to Melissa. Go around over there. You'll be able to get behind and rescue Alexandra. Now distract them. Wait, are you crazy? They'll kill you. Trust me on this, detective. And she put her hand on my shoulder and nodded. I snuck all the way around to the other side and peeked around the corner. The altar was in front of me, with Lydia facing away this time. I got my gun ready and waited impatiently. The chanting permeated the minds, sung in unison that the walls vibrated. Hey, a voice shouted and the chanting stopped. All the faces turned around to face Melissa, who stood there, cool as a cucumber. What is the meaning of this, recruit? Lydia asked. Zealots, bring her here. A few men started walking towards her, but she drew a gun and pointed at them. They recoiled in fear, to which Lydia got angrier. What are you waiting for? Kill her! Melissa shot a bullet in the air, and the next few things that happened were so quick that they became a blur. I saw the majority of the group rushing at Melissa. I saw a big number of cultists taking off their masks, drawing their guns, and starting to shoot at the masked cultists. I saw Melissa shooting at the crowd, which was approaching her, but she was overwhelmed. I couldn't see what happened to her, though. I used the moment to rush up to the altar, and before they even realized what was going on, I shot one of Alexander's captors in the back of the head. The other one turned around, and when he saw me, he took a few steps back, ready to run. I shot him too, because fuck negotiating with brainwashed fanatics. Alexandra, come on, I shouted and gave her my hand, and she immediately took it, albeit confused in the whole mess. We need to run now. Suddenly, the entire place started shaking, and I lost my balance. There was something that sounded like a deep, enormous groan resonating throughout the entire mines. An earthquake? The ceiling then started to collapse, with big chunks of rock falling down, crushing many of the cultists and undercover rebels. Detective, stop! Lydia shouted, staring at me. She had a look of worry and desperation on her face. You don't know what you're doing. The corruption has to be stopped. Her words were cut off when a big piece of ceiling fell right on top of her head, leaving nothing more visible than her hand hanging out from under the boulder, blood oozing out. I remember feeling relish seeing Lydia's life snuffed out like that. Come on, I shouted at Alexandra and pulled her. Wait, she's right. We have to complete the ritual, Alexandra said.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Did they brainwash her? If we don't do it, the whole town will die, she exclaimed. Fuck this town, I rebutted and picked her up, despite her protests. I wasn't going to let her die here, and I wasn't dying here either. She thrashed against me, but I ran. Melissa ran across our path on the way out. She was badly beaten, but still alive. And she led us outside as the entire place continued shaking more and more violently, the deep groan getting louder and louder, sounding like some beast that we awoke from a long slumber. Many of the cultists were running in panic, while some were on their knees, seemingly praying, but most were already dead. We're almost there. Come on, Melissa shouted. I was wheezing like an asthmatic by that point, barely able to keep up in my poor condition, with a little girl slumped over my shoulder. I cursed for allowing myself to get in such a bad shape. I saw the light of day, and it gave me renewed hope, so I ran even faster, despite my lungs and legs burning. We were out, but we didn't stop for another 10 seconds or so. There was a loud crack, and suddenly the ceiling collapsed, blocking the mine's exit. About a dozen people managed to escape, running for their lives in panic, both cultists and rebels alike. I couldn't be bothered chasing them. The final rumbles beneath the earth died down, and people's screams abated, and then everything went silent. I put Alexandra on the ground, panting for her life. Alexandra, are you okay? Melissa asked. She hugged her and stroked her hair to calm her down. Oh, me? I'm fine as well, I said sarcastically between breaths, chuckling at my own joke. Melissa looked at me with compassion and said, Thank you, detective. You saved her life. Well, what about the order? They'll be back. The surviving members will reorganize the order to stop the corruption from spreading. Ah, fuck me, I said. Hey, language, Melissa rebutted, looking at Alexandra, signaling to me to not swear around the kid. I stared at the mine entrance, processing what had just happened. As I stared, I saw traces of coal and tar strewn about the ground, stretching from the entrance like veins. The gust of air must have pushed some of it out from the mine, I thought. We got Alexandra back to her dad, and I decided to stay in Northbury a little longer. The order had to be eliminated, and I couldn't leave. A lot of the stragglers gave themselves up, but I wouldn't stop until every last one of them was no longer a threat. It wasn't until one day, about a month after rescuing Alexandra, that I heard the news that the people living near the mines had to be evacuated. I asked Melissa what was going on, and she threw some photographs on the desk in front of me. I flipped through them. They were photos of the mines and the houses we saw on our way there, but something was wrong. The traces of coal I saw on the ground at the mine after escaping were much more spread now. The entire quarry was completely black, covered in tar-like substance, and much of it creeped onto the road and even overtook some of the houses nearby, making them look like they were dipped in tar. The black substance ended in the middle of the street, spreading at the edge just like it did in the quarry, like roots or veins, menacingly reaching out to devour the street. What the hell is this? I asked. Melissa pursed her lips and said, The corruption. It's coming.